sorry that Toshi's leaving at this opportune strategic moment. Bear with this because this is precarious. If you're following, I speak like Krishnamurti here for a moment. If you're following the speaker at this point, the speaker is making available for you a self-disclosure of Jung's meaning and his incapacity to understand a fundamental differentiation, which he has assumed is universal and has forgotten that it must be a universal integration as well. Let's go through this. Let me read it without any commentary now and see if you can pick it out. Even the layman reading this essay will be struck by the amount of material from fairy tale, myth, and poetry that appears in the illustrations. In this connection, it is astonishing how relatively seldom the persons I interrogated were conscious of sources of this kind. The main reasons for this are, one, in general, people think little, if at all, about the origins of dream images, and still less about myth motifs. Two, the sources have been forgotten. Three, the sources were never in any sense conscious. That is to say, the images are new, archetypal creations. The third possibility is much less rare than one might suppose. On the contrary, it occurs so frequently that comparative research into symbols becomes unavoidable in elucidating the spontaneous products of the unconscious. The widely held view that the mythologems or myth motifs are always connected with a tradition proves untenable, since they may reappear anywhere, at any time, and in any individual, regardless of tradition. An image can be considered archetypal when it can be shown to exist in the records of human history in identical form and with the same meaning. Two extremes must be distinguished here. One, the image is clearly defined and is consciously connected with a tradition. Two, the image is without doubt autosthesoneous, there being no possibility, let alone probability, of a tradition. Every degree of mutual contamination may be found between these two extremes. In consequence of the collective nature of the image, it is often impossible to establish its full range of meaning from the associative material of a single individual. But since it is of importance to do this for practical therapeutic purposes, the necessity of comparative research into symbols for medical psychology becomes evident on these grounds too. For this purpose, the investigator must turn back to those periods in human history when symbol formation still went on unimpeded, that is, when there was still no epistemological criticism of the formation of images, and when, in consequence, facts that in themselves were unknown could be expressed in definite visual form. The period of this kind closest to us is that of medieval natural philosophy, which reached its zenith in the 17th century, and in the 18th century gradually left the field to science. It attained its most significant development in alchemy and hermetic philosophy. Here, as in a reservoir, were collected the most enduring and the most important mythologems of the ancient world. It is significant that hermetic philosophy was in the main practiced by physicians. Indeed, if there are any doctors of civilization, they're in the Hermetic tradition. What is archetypal? There's a fundamental ambiguity here. Is the unconscious archetypal? Seems so. Is the self archetypal? It seems so. The false idea is to equate in an illusory ignorance, well, then the self must be the unconscious. Man could never know himself. He would, by this idea, be with certainty unable to know himself. All you could do at best would be to make a close approximation based upon a worldly model of probability. It denies the fundamental reality of all religious experience. This is a very demonic idea when let loose. You might think about that, and you might review the tape and see if you can follow through. This discussion is poignant. The way that psychic energy comes out of the self, its mode of radiance, is very often conditioned by the ideational structures which are operative in that person. The ideas don't just occur in some kind of abstract mind level, which you can go around. The symbolic self is the fount, is the focus where the ideational structures are held, where the gestalts of the ideas occur. That's where they are. They ain't in the ground. That's where they are. Here's an idea that one can never understand the fount of all ideas. It means that the best that you can do is a close approximation by probability based on worldly evidence. This is a terrible dilemma for a human being to be caught in. And if you believe this, if you believe in the illusion, the belief tempers and changes the illusion to a delusion. A delusion is an illusion that you believe in. We live in a world which is almost drowning in delusion. Just about drowning in delusion. This idea, this notion that one cannot know oneself, coupled with the dismissal of traditions, makes orphans of us all in such an arcane way that if you really, really did believe that, madness and suicide would be too slow. It's a condition which is not tenable. And so what actually happens in practical fact is that people live in fantasy worlds, which is like bouncing off the blurs and the sheens and living on the reflections of that. So you can see that the ignorance is not just the simple ignorance of not knowing. It's a very complex ignorance of not even being able to believe that anyone has anything to know. There are many steps. There are many walls insulating the human being from any kind of capacity. There's no way to go directly. You can't tell someone the truth. Even if you had power of language and knew what you were talking about, you could not do that. It's like a baffle. You can't get through. The time-honored solution to this is a program of circumambulation like this, taking your time month after month and rotating your attention in a very measured way through the very phases, through the transformational medias and through the objectivizations, and going completely through that process forwards and backwards once, through that whole cycle, that ecology, gives you a chance to see that even though you have a blind spot, even though you have a delusory quality of loss of confidence at the very religious heart of yourself, it's characteristic of worldly people to have this. There is an activity of the individual which parallels the establishment of a democracy. A democracy is a correlate to the free individual. The free individual is one who is able to rotate themselves through all of their capacities consciously. Let's put it in a graphic way, the way I used to speak about 15 years ago. Even supposing that half your consciousness is available to you and the other half is unconscious, even supposing that delusion to be true, if you expand your consciousness, then are you expanding your unconscious? If you move your consciousness, are you moving your unconsciousness? So if you move your consciousness towards the other side, towards the underworld, your unconscious will come into this world, even on that basis. And if you rotate your limited consciousness through a full circle, you will have gained a perspective on the whole, even though you're moving with a limited pointer. But of course, the illusion that there is an incapacity long before you get to the end of the circle, everyone has the realization that this is a whole, that you're perfectly capable of existing in the whole of it, and that there is no missing piece. It's just that your worldly attentiveness makes it seem like something is not there, like it's invisible, like it were unconscious. By educationally pivoting your conscious attention into the full circle of capacity, one comes to understand not only is the full circle available for your inspection, that there are techniques and modes of doing this, but that the center of that is where the spontaneity is, not in any proverbial unconsciousness, but in the self. But that the self doesn't exist as some kind of arcane, super unconscious point, but it is the focus of the full range of your capacity. What else can it be? Once you've done that, once you have established that for yourself, there is a transformation that happens. Your ability to be deluded by a fundamental illusion, articulated very well in this kind of an idea, is destroyed forever. You're never going to be a sucker for that again. You're never going to be able to be set up by somebody's spiel that you're basically incapable of self-realization, and therefore you better toe the line that we're carrying around with us at great expense, and you better appreciate that. It's like that. You'll never be a little cog that has to fit in some kind of a doctrinaire wheel, because that's the only way you're going to make it. You realize for yourself that indeed you can know yourself. You can discover everything that is essential about yourself with nothing left out and no mysteries left over. Indeed, the biggest mystery is why you could not have understood that in the first place. That the wholeness of life could be structurally impaired by the process of living. Even saying it in that way, you can see it's like a non sequitur. That doesn't make sense. Would life evolve? A process whereby the vehicle that does the living is incapable of the full life? Not likely. Taint natural, as Mark Twain would say. Doesn't make sense. We are together in such a primordial way that the only way to be convinced that we aren't together is to fall into delusion. That's the only way. And that kind of forgetfulness, that kind of protean forgetfulness, is just simply characteristic of the world at all times. In this particular time coming up, this next generation is just raised to the nth degree. Notice here that right away, the loose thread that if you pull it unravels the delusion is to understand any one tradition and what it was for. As soon as you do, that whole fabric of the delusion is lost. You understand that, well, if the Upanishads, or if the Hellenistic Jews, or if the Chinese, or whatever, if any of these traditions carry a tone of wisdom, they all do. There's that kind of a confidence and certainty. And you realize how many traditions man has, you realize what a treasure trove we have. A treasure trove of image bases, of integration modes, of symbolic clothes. Not only does the psyche have to have a suit of clothes made by a single tradition, but there is a whole wardrobe available for man, planetary man. There's a whole wardrobe of capacities. And instead of the individual being dwarfed into insignificance and almost snuffed out by lack of confidence, man is restored individually back to the very realistic, empirical actuality that you're capable of protean ways of living. You choose a way that seems right for you. And you live that life with confidence. And that life is yours then. Whatever it is that you're living in that fullness, that's right. You won't jeopardize it with, quote, evil or ignorance at all. When you put your whole valuation into it, you make sure that that life is as good as can be. All human beings do. They always have. The key is to reinstate the confidence in the ability to realize the self back to man. That's like the Promethean gift of fire. All you need is that spark, that insight that you can know. How, you know, is up to you to apply that spark and unravel it. But the thing that a hermetic tradition, a teacher, can give you is to make that spark come alive, to strike that flint of your basic confidence and have that spark come alive in you, and to fortify you and show you that it always has been this way. Human beings around the world have been able to recover their true selves again and again and again, like superhighways. Some traditions are like superhighways, and they can work for millions at a time. It seems like a tough, arcane problem that only super intelligent yogi could possibly do in times like we live, but believe me, it's not so at all. And given the right effective unfolding process, there's no problem. There's no problem at all. Well, it takes only one generation to forget. It only takes one to remember, too. It's like that, the same thing. I have last year put the basic transformation sequence out into a diagram, which makes it a little easier to conceive. Your attentiveness at any one time in its broadest spread is the extent of one of the quaternaries of this course, one of the groups of four parts of this course. And as your attention moves on to another section, the fifth section behind it, the quintessence, becomes, quote, unconscious, becomes, quote, subconscious, as it were. It's not that it's disappeared. It's just that you're not attending to that aspect. So I've put this on a sheet so that you can see graphically in some kind of a diagram. And you can notice that the first exchange in wholeness is between nature and magic. The first major crisis of consciousness comes when man discovers his magic, that he has a psychic energy. And as he uses the psychic energy consciously, it seems that nature becomes unconscious. It's not only true of Homo sapiens sapiens, it's true of all the cognate roots of mankind, even back 2 million years ago. There's already that kind of a resonance, even in Homo erectus. But it reaches a real flashpoint. It becomes a bone of contention, as it were, about 100,000 years ago. In other words, while the exchange of nature for magic in the human world was a capacity that man had had for at least a couple of million years, about 100,000 years ago, it became a problem because he began to worry about it. And the first sign of worrying about it, the very first sign that we have, the earliest sign, is that there are flowers in the grave. And maybe you better help remind the dead that things are beautiful and life is beautiful. Maybe it isn't just certain. Maybe it isn't just automatic. Maybe man's magic has to add something to life because it's not there in nature. See, it's become a problem. Right then and there. Lao Tzu says, as soon as there is good, there is evil. As soon as there's a right, there's a left. Flowers in the grave. The earliest gravesite, incidentally, is in Israel, about 100,000 years ago. A Neanderthal grave, not a Homo sapiens, Homo Neanderthalus. Flowers in the grave. It's an indication of beginning to lean on magic because something seems to be maybe missing from nature, and we better make sure that it's there, see. What had been a part of nature now becomes problematical to the extent that we're not sure. And out of that comes the development of consciousness as we would know it today. That's the flashpoint of the origin of consciousness as we would colloquially call it today. Enough for this week. Thank you. Yeah.